Hello, this is Denise Lee Yan, and welcome to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. The Brand as Business Bites podcast features great stuff for your brain to chew on, including insights and interviews with newsmakers, brand builders, and thought leaders. It's available on iTunes and on my website, DeniseLeeYan.com.
Do you work on or with a small or medium-sized company? If so, this session is for you. Today, I'm speaking with Jeremy Miller, brand builder, keynote speaker, and the president of Sticky Branding, a brand-building consultancy. After Jeremy successfully rebranded his family's business, he embarked on a decade-long study of how small and mid-sized companies create incredible brands. And his new book, Sticky Branding, 12.5 Principles to Stand Out, Attract Customers, and Grow an Incredible Brand, details his findings from interviews he conducted with thousands of CEOs and business owners across dozens of sectors. It's an extremely helpful read, and so I wanted Jeremy to share some of his insights with you, my listeners. So I'm so happy to have you with us today, Jeremy. Welcome.
Thanks for being here. It's a pleasure to be here, Denise. Thank you.
So your book is based in part on your own personal experience of revitalizing your family's business. Why don't you kind of recap that experience for us a little bit?
Certainly. Well, I definitely did not have the traditional entry into the world of branding and brand building. My story came in as 2004, I joined my family's business. My parents owned a recruiting company, and I had previously been working in the software industry selling CRM software. And I had the opportunity to join the family business as the director of business development. And I thought I'd come in and turn the company, accelerate the company, grow it to the next level, be that hotshot sales guy. But what I quickly discovered was a business in duress. The wheels were essentially falling off the bus. And at first we thought it was a sales problem, but as we dug into the problem, we realized we had a branding problem, and that it wasn't that our sales guys or our sales process was failing us, it was that our customers could not distinguish us from any of our competition. And so as a result, what used to take our sales guys a week to achieve in the 90s was taking them over a month. And the real kicker was we were getting terrible clients. We were getting the cast-offs and the clients that everyone else had fired. So I got into the world of branding as a way to turn around my family business. And so I rebranded it and repositioned it. And the outcome of that was an organization that generated at least a client a week all through inbound marketing for the better part of a decade.
Wow, what incredible results. And I want you to talk just a little bit about the new name and new brand that you came up with, because I thought it was so creative for a space that, quite frankly, I wouldn't normally associate with being such a creative brand.
Thank you.
Leap Job.
Well, the original
right?
company name, it was Leap Job. So the original company name was Miller & Associates, and it was an IT staffing business. And what triggered the rebrand was in the early 2000s, Y2K ended, and then the dot-com bubble burst, and then 9/11 happened. And it was a series of successive blows that crippled the IT staffing market where our company was based. And so to reinvent the company, once we realized that our customers couldn't distinguish us from anyone else, we actually looked at the brand. And one of the things we did is we looked at a core metaphor for the brand. And one of the things we discovered is that a career is like a journey. So people are moving towards retirement. They're stuck. They want to take a leap forward. And the word leapfrog came up again and again and again. And so we played on it. The company name became Leap Job. The tagline was Leap For It. And the company identity was a frog, a red-eyed tree frog, that was always in motion, always leaping. We call them Leapy the Frog. So it was a fun little play on the concept of moving forward in your career.
And certainly addressed the problem of the lack of differentiation. So like I said, I just thought it was such a creative solution. Jeremy, let me ask you specifically about the brand building challenges that small and mid-sized businesses have that larger enterprises don't. And then maybe the flip side, what are some of the advantages or opportunities that these smaller companies have that larger ones may not have?
Sure. Well, I think the comparison I would give for the challenge for small and mid-sized businesses is, like, remember what it's like to be chosen for gym class or chosen for a team in middle school. And so you pick your two team captains, and they would, and inevitably the big kids got picked first and the little kids got picked last. Now, the nice thing about that analogy is everyone knows what it feels like to be chosen, not chosen, or chosen last. But the schoolyard is very democratic. You can see what's the difference from the big guys to the little guys and what it takes to advance your position. The challenge today for small and medium-sized businesses is we see the big guys. We see the Starbucks, the Nikes, the Amazons, but we don't see anything in between. So learning how to advance your business and to grow a remarkable brand and to stand out in a very crowded, competitive marketplace has never been more challenging, and the roadmap to stand out is not there. And so that's the big issue for small and medium-sized businesses is how do you create the recognition or the visibility so that people will beat a path to your door when all the case studies and examples you have are of companies that are humongous, and what they do is not applicable to what we do.
Right. And so what I love about your book is that it really is a playbook for across these 12 and a half principles that, you know, a small business owner or medium-sized business executive can actually just go through step by step and not only learn the principle and insight, but then also read some great stories about how other companies have done it. And then at the end of each chapter, I really, really enjoy the exercises and the tools that you provide so that the reader can actually apply their learning straight to their business.
Mm, thank you.
So I want to dig into some of these principles that will maybe, you know, further illustrate the unique challenges and advantages of small and medium-sized businesses. And a few of the principles in your book really resonated with me, in particular because of the similar insights I shared in my book, What Great Brands Do. So let me ask you about the principle that you say, that you call tilt the odds. Why is deliberately choosing where to play and how to win so important?
Well, I think this goes back to your previous question of what's the challenge for small and medium-sized businesses is when you're competing against the big companies, they set the conditions for what are the rules of an industry and how are the pricing structures played and what are the advantages. And those advantages are tilted in the big company's favor. And so in order for a small and medium-sized business to stand out and create that relationship with their customers where they people think of them first, choose them first, and come back again and again, that sticky brand relationship, they've got to figure out a way to tilt the odds in their favor. And one of the easiest ways or most effective ways to do that is by being very purposeful and strategic about who they serve. And that could be a niche market. It could be a niche product or service. It could be looking at combining value-add services to create a new category or subcategory. But it's that opportunity to redefine how you play in the industry so that you can tilt the odds in your favor versus playing by the rules of the big guys.
Mm-hmm. And really, you know, leaning into a place where you have a natural advantage, that seems to make so much sense. But I think, what you point out in your book is that it I think sometimes people are afraid of saying no or prioritizing, which means that they're, you know, deprioritizing other markets. And so just there's a real need to make tough decisions.
Right. And it plays to a concept in your book, which is great brands commit and stay committed. It's the choosing where to play and who to serve and what makes you unique, what's that purpose and vision, but that deliberate steps that you take to focus your brand is really what separates great brands or sticky brands from everyone else.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about another principle in your book, total customer experience. And, you know, this is about bringing your point of differentiation to life in every touch point. How do businesses translate their uniqueness into every aspect of the customer experience? What are some ways they can do that?
Well, I think the first step is to identify what you do or what your business does better than anyone else. And it's identifying and distilling those areas of either competitive advantage or uniqueness and really distilling that down to its essence. And once you know what that experience is or that differentiation is, it's about baking it into everything you do. So let me give you an example. One of the stories I talked about in the book was Purdy's Chocolates. And Purdy's is the largest retailer of specialty chocolates in Canada. They would compete with, say, Lindt or Laura Secord, those types of chocolate retailers. But what they found is chocolate's a commodity. You can buy chocolate anywhere. But their chocolates, if they can connect them to either a preference or a favorite, they elevate the brand in the customer's mind. So they like to ask their customers, what's your favorite? So what's your favorite chocolate? And that creates a conversation. Or they'll also ask their customers, where's the chocolate going? So it could be for an anniversary or Christmas or Valentine's or something else. And those simple questions elevate the chocolate from something you eat to an experience. And it's this, it's about understanding how the product is used, how the service is used, or what makes you unique that allows a brand to create those experiences that are unique and that have that connection, that emotional connection.
Mm-hmm. And make them very memorable. And you know, what I like, one of the things you say in your book is that, you know, we're not talking about spending lots of money to create these compelling customer experiences. This, in your example of the Purdy's chocolate, I mean, the salesperson could have just easily, you know, said, have a nice day, ring you up, send you on your way. You know, engaging the customer in a conversation does not cost anything extra, but it really, as you said, just transforms their brand into a true experience. And so I really appreciate that example.
So what I was going to say is when you look at any type of real brand building experience, they don't always have to be expensive marketing campaigns. The big example you would take to compare to Purdy's would be Zappos. They have over-the-top customer service, and it's a commitment to provide their staff and their team the training and the flexibility and the room to be able to create those customer experiences. That's not a high cost. It's a commitment.
Yes. I love that. That's great. So let me finally ask you, you know, we were kind of comparing notes before we got on this call about, you know, writing a book, and I'm just curious as to what, you know, what have you learned from this process of writing, researching and then writing your book? What are some of the insights that you've really kind of come across in your journey?
Well, it's a big question. There's a lot. The one comment that hits me right away when you ask that question is that writing a book is a lot like a quest. And in order for a hero to complete his quest, whether you're talking about Star Wars or Harry Potter or any type of those types of examples, in order for the hero of a story to complete their quest, they have to change. And one of the things I found as I was writing Sticky Branding is in order to complete the book and write the book, it was just a big, huge goal, and it was a big, overwhelming project that I had to change not only my approach to how I ran my business, but my thinking and really going deep into it. So it was a very much a transformative process for me. But as I did that, I got all these insights and opportunities. So, for example, hearing how entrepreneurs talk about their struggles and talk about how they love their business and they love what they do and that energy and passion to go to work every day was one of the most uplifting pieces of this, that people are brand building not because it's what drives sales. They're brand building because they really love what they do and the impact they create to their customers. So it was that combination of personal growth and inspiration that I really took out of this project.
Wow, that's great. Well, Jeremy, please let my listeners know how they can learn more about your book and you and your agency, Sticky Branding.
Sure. Well, the best way to find me is go into Google and type Sticky Branding. My website itself is stickybranding.com. The book is called Sticky Branding. It's available at any bookstore. And I'm on all the social networks at Sticky Branding. So the word Sticky Branding, you will find me.
And that is a sticky brand. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for sharing with us today. I wish you the best for a successful launch. I so enjoyed your book, and I know many others will too. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand is Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes or through my website, DeniseLeeYon.com. And check out my new best-selling book, What Great Brands Do, the 7 Brand Building Principles That Separate the Best from the Rest. Go to WhatGreatBrandsDo.com. And remember, good is the enemy of great. Greatness is a choice. Choose to be great.